The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Gloria America. Bonjour. Hi, Kennedy Hewitt live inside the Beltway on this week of America's shame. We have lost a war after 20 years. It's beginning to settle in. And while there are other many stories out there, and I continue to please, please, please urge you to contribute to our Haitian relief campaign at HughHewitt.com. The Help Haiti banner is up there at the top. Of course, we're all focused on the 15,000 Americans who are trapped in Kabul and across the entire expanse of Texas, Texas-sized country that is Afghanistan. There are reports that the Brits are sending out the Royal Marines to find their fellow citizens and bring them to the airport. The United States is not doing that. President emerged briefly from hiding yesterday to give a completely irrelevant COVID speech and not take questions. There are serious questions about his competence, his ability to function at this point. He did give an exclusive interview to George Stephanopoulos of ABC News. The excerpts that have been released thus far are as follows. Let's play cut number 32, George Stephanopoulos with the president yesterday.
When you look at what's happened over the last week, was it a failure of intelligence, planning, execution, or judgment?
Look, I don't think it was a failure. Look, it was a simple choice, George. When the Taliban, let me back and put it another way. When you had the government of Afghanistan, the leader of that government, getting in a plane and taking off and going to another country, when you saw the significant collapse of the Afghan troops we had trained, up to 300,000 of them, just leaving their equipment and taking off, that was, you know, I'm not, that's what happened. That's simply what happened.
But we've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
What did you think when you first saw those pictures?
What I thought was we have to gain control of this. We have to move this more quickly. We have to move in a way in which we can take control of that airport. And we did.
I have to fact check that. It was 2 days ago. Many have already noted that. Here's cut 31 from the George Stephanopoulos exclusive interview with the president yesterday.
All troops are supposed to be out by August 31st. Even if Americans and our Afghan allies are still trying to get out, they're going to leave?
We're going to do everything in our power to get all Americans out and our allies out.
Does that mean troops will stay beyond August 31st if necessary?
It depends on where we are and whether we can get ramp these numbers up to 5,000 to 7,000 a day coming out. If that's the case, they'll all be out.
Because we've got like 10 to 15,000 Americans in the country right now, right? And are you committed to making sure that the troops stay until every American who wants to be out is out?
Yes.
How about our Afghan allies? We have about 80,000 people.
Well, that's not the estimate.
Is that too high?
That's too high.
How many?
Estimate we're giving is somewhere between 50 and 65,000 folks total, counting their families.
Does the commitment hold for them as well?
The commitment holds to get everyone out that, in fact, we can get out and everyone should come out. And that's the objective. That's what we're doing now. That's the path we're on. And I think we'll get there.
So Americans should understand that troops might have to be there beyond August 31st.
No, Americans should understand that we're going to try to get it done before August 31st.
But if we don't, the troops will stay.
If we don't, we'll determine at the time who's left.
President Biden. No, go ahead, Ann.
Of course, if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them all out.
Okay, and we will stay until we get them all out. Cut number 25, President Biden again with George Stephanopoulos.
So you don't think this could have been handled, this actually could have been handled better in any way? No mistakes?
No, I don't think it could have been handled in a way that we're going to go back in hindsight and look, but the idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing. I don't know how that happens. I don't know how that happened.
So for you, that was always priced into the decision?
Yes.
I am somewhat astonished that ABC News is treating this as a normal news story. and yesterday tweeted out that the entire tape needs to be released immediately so the American people can see. It's the only communication we've had from the president other than that disastrous speech and the non-responsive remarks he gave yesterday. That got a lot of attention. George, who I've known a long time, he's not a friend, but I've known him professionally for a long time. And he's a great journalist, by the way, responded. He's a man of the center left, but he's definitely a good journalist. George responded to me this morning on Twitter, releasing entire transcript this morning. I responded in turn, thank you, but we need the entire unedited tape. ABC will have an enormous audience across not just the nation, but the world, the whole globe. We need to see and hear the president. For in seeing and hearing the president, we will be able to judge his capacity for what's ahead, which is difficult. I added, thank you again, George Stephanopoulos, for responding, but we need the entire unedited tape in real time, this nation and our allies. As I first responded, it will be watched by so people can judge across the country and globe, can judge and assess president. Adding, time is of the essence for everyone. I want to repeat that. I added on the Twitter feed, we have lost a 20-year war. Americans by the thousands are in danger. We have to decide what to do. The response must be across the government and in elections, such as California's and Virginia's, which are nearing conclusion. The job of the media is to provide as much information as possible. So again, my last tweet back at George, thank you, but please urge ABC to broadcast the entire tape. It is a matter of urgent timing, given the choices that will be made in the next hours, days, and weeks. Again, appreciate the response. I look forward to watching it, all of it. I can't overemphasize how important it is that the American people be allowed to see the unedited tape of the president as we lose a 20-year war, and I have questions about his capacity, and they are not unique to me. They are across the political spectrum. People need to see what ABC saw. There isn't a special class of Americans called the media. They're only Americans. And I appreciate that ABC has an exclusive and it's a ratings wonderful thing. But ratings have for too long driven the politics of this country into the ground. Now they may drive the national security of the country into the ground. And we have to cover the news. Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, Mark Miley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, also gave a press conference yesterday, the key excerpts of which are cut number three, the Secretary of Defense.
We're going to get everyone that we can possibly evacuated. And I'll do that as long as we possibly can until the clock runs out or we run out of capability.
He went on, cut number six.
Louis.
And I would draw a distinction, Barr, between extracting someone in an in extremis condition or circumstance versus going out and collecting up large numbers of American citizens.
Do you have the capability to go out and collect Americans?
We don't have the capability to go out and collect up large numbers of people, Barr.
This is inconsistent with a Twitter report from Will Huggins that the British paratroopers are running patrols to exfil British nationals. That's Will Huggins, H-U-Y-G-E-N-S. We have a lot of USMC there. They could run the same kind of patrols. They have been doing so for 20 years in Afghanistan. I don't know why we're not doing it. There might be a good answer. Secretary of Defense continued cut number four.
In terms of whether or not we intend to send forces outside of the airfield to collect up American citizens or Afghans who are special immigrant visa applicants, the forces that we have are focused on security of the airfield, and you know how important that is, and you know what happens if we lose the ability to provide that security. And so I don't want to detract from that, and we have to make sure that we can not only secure the airfield, but as the chairman said, defend it as well, because there are a number of threats still in the environment. I certainly don't want to do anything to make the airfield less safe, and we won't do that. But we will continue to coordinate and deconflict with the Taliban and make sure that those people that need to get to the airfield have the right credentials to ensure passage. And the Taliban has been checking those credentials, and if they have them, they have allowed them to pass.
Chairman Miley said this, cut number five.
Two things, Barbara. One is State Department, as you know, as I said, is working with the Taliban to facilitate safe passage of American citizens, U.S. passport holders, to the airport. That's the primary means, and under the current conditions, that's the primary effort. We have capability to do other things if necessary.
Well, can I ask you what that means? Because you also said there were international special forces there that have the capability to extract, and those words suggest very clearly in the military realm you would go get people.
Well, that would be a policy decision, and if directed, we have capabilities that can execute whatever we're directed.
This is why we need to see the tape of ABC's George Stephanopoulos interview with the president. We do have the capability. Does he have the capacity to so order? He should. We need to know. Voters in California and Virginia will begin to render a verdict, but Congress needs to know. Everyone needs to know. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Ambassador Michael Oren, longtime ambassador from Israel to the United States, joining us from Israel. Good morning, Dr. Oren, on a dark Thursday morning. Your assessment of the events of the past week?
Good to be with you, Hugh. It's very disheartening, tragic, and dangerous. Israel, like other American allies in the world, Germany, South Korea, Japan, depend on not just the perception of America's ability to project power, but also projection of American power. And that perception and the reality is taking a huge blow this week. But we have an additional problem that the Germans and the Japanese and the South Koreans don't have, and that is that the Taliban have now acquired vast amounts, untold amounts, of sophisticated American weaponry. And we remember back in 2011 when Gaddafi fell in Libya, it took about 1 week to for American shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles to reach Gaza. 1 week. Can you imagine what we're going to have to face now?
I can't. But, Dr. Oren, this doesn't have to be a Dunkirk moment. It could be an Incheon moment. The United States could return to get those weapons and get our people and our allies and our friendly Afghans out. Task Force 58 operated over 400 nautical miles. It was an unprecedented, led by and devised by General Mattis, exercise in 2001. Now, the entire executive branch and much of America is in shock. We have never lost a war this way. It's not remotely comparable to Vietnam in terms of its shock. Do you agree that we ought to be at least considering what I believe Israel would be doing, which is going over to the offensive?
I don't know about going on the offensive, but certainly you can make efforts to destroy some of that weaponry. I know that if we ever lose a plane or even a drone behind enemy lines, we do our best to destroy it because it's fallen into enemy hands. Think about just the technology. Now, I don't know whether the Taliban is in a position to take advantage of that technology, but they'll find people who are. and so at the very least, try to regain control of these vast stores of American armaments.
You're a historian and a very accomplished historian. You know, when I say Incheon moment, that doesn't mean a sea invasion of a landlocked country. It means when it looks like an absolute catastrophic defeat, you do something wholly unexpected and surprise the enemy and at least buy us some time to do what ought to have been done from January to now. Is that impossible in your mind to even consider? Because I do have questions about the president's capacity at this moment.
I think a lot of it has to do with the American people, and I don't see a tremendous amount of support on either side of the political divide. Maybe you do. I just remember from my time in Washington, if you recall the time that President Obama had sworn to uphold a red line against Assad in Syria to use chemical weapons, and phone calls were running 600-1 against it in Congress, both among Republicans and Democrats. Americans didn't want to go to war again.
And that was a catastrophic decision for the Obama legacy, though. Phone calls can't drive policy. MacArthur didn't take a poll.
No, he did not. And I understand the Incheon moment. I get it. I think not as an historian, just as a simple citizen looking out to the side, cannot understand why America didn't provide air power, air cover to the Afghan army. That mystery to me.
Now, the key question I wanted to get to you as well, do you think the American public will internalize the misguided approach, if that can be called an approach, of Team Biden to the JCPOA? If there's any silver lining in a deep, deeply dark sky, it's that perhaps that deal is dead. No one will trust this gang.
Well, I don't understand, you know, why, you know, after reaching the deal with the Taliban, the Biden administration would think that the Iranian Shiite regime is more trustworthy. They'll violate that agreement in the same way. The United States also trained the Palestinian security forces, which they trained them back in Gaza in 2007. They were overthrown by Hamas in about a week. It's saying something about the power of local forces that are trained by the United States to withstand Islamic extremism. It hasn't worked. So I think that I would hope that this defeat and humiliation will be internalized by American policymakers and say, let's not make these same mistakes again.
Hey, Dr. Orr, your friend, my acquaintance, George Stephanopoulos, scored an exclusive interview with the president. They released excerpts this morning. George tells me they'll release a transcript. I think the American people in the world need to see the entire unedited tape to make some judgments about the president's judgment. What do you think?
I don't know. That I can't say. I haven't seen the tape.
No one has.
They make the judgment. You'd have to make a case amendment of the 25 of the Constitution?
Not that kind of judgment. Just the judgment about. I don't think it's a 25th. A judgment about whether or not he's got the capacity to make any. I think he's. Tom Cotton used the term shell shocked.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It seems that everyone's shell shocked. I went on Israeli news the other night, shortly after our friend Tony Blinken went on. I think it was to meet the press and trying to explain the policy. And I got to tell you, I know we both have a high opinion of Tony. I think it was an impossible situation to explain. It was embarrassing.
It was a very difficult interview. Dr. Michael Oren, thank you. We'll talk to you next week. Hour number 2, straight ahead, America on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning Glory, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, inside the Beltway, live on a very dark Thursday morning. America's lost a war. That shock is settling in. We've left thousands of Americans stranded in Afghanistan with vast piles of sophisticated equipment, as well as allies and Afghan friends hostage behind terrorist lines. Soon that will develop into an even greater morass. I'm joined by Congressman Jim Banks, himself a veteran of the war. Good morning, Congressman. Welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hey, good morning, Hugh. Good to be with you.
To ground this, Congressman, would you describe to the audience your experience with the military over the last 15 years?
Well, I'm a Navy Reserve officer. I was commissioned through the same program that Pete Buttigieg went through, actually, the Direct Commission Officer Program, which is unique in the entire United States military, a great program to give people an opportunity to serve. I was very proud to serve. I'm a Navy logistics officer in what's called the Supply Corps. I went through all of my initial training. Went through the Supply Corps school in Newport, Rhode Island, one of the greatest Navy towns in the country that I love. And then immediately, I was, like so many Navy reservists, I was called up to go to Afghanistan. That was a typical experience over the last couple of decades for Navy reservists, not to go to sea, but to go to Afghanistan or Iraq.
Go ahead. I was going to ask where and when did you serve in Afghanistan, so we know where your specific expertise is geographically.
Yeah, it's relevant. I was deployed to Afghanistan in 2014 and 15. And again, all of my training, all my background is in Navy logistics, but I found myself uniquely in a role in something called foreign military sales, which is the effort in Afghanistan on the front end and the back end of acquiring American-made equipment and then transferring that equipment over to the Afghan army and the Afghan police. So you can imagine, as this is unfolding, my biggest question is about all of that. All the billions, the tens of billions of dollars of American-made equipment. I'm not just talking about Humvees and ground-wheeled vehicles, which is the portfolio the commodity that I oversaw during my stint in Afghanistan. But the weapons and ammunition, nobody's talking about the night vision goggles. I mean, we spent hundreds of millions of dollars on night vision goggles and gave them to the Afghan army and the Afghan police. That I guarantee you are now in the hands of the Taliban, medical supplies. I mean, the list goes on and on of the different types of American-made military-grade equipment and other things we've turned over that are now in the Taliban's hands.
Were you at Bagram or in Kabul or Kandahar, Representative Banks?
All the above. I was stationed on the headquarters base just outside of the embassy, so I spent a lot of time at the embassy with the embassy staff. But I did spend a lot of our vehicles would come in and out as they arrived in Afghanistan. We had a couple of, by the way, a couple of parking lots. I led a delegation of congressmen back to Afghanistan a few years ago to show them exactly what I did, which was process these vehicles, justify them on the front end, and then title transfer them over to the Afghans. There are a couple of very large parking lots. I'll send you photos of them later, Hugh. They're baffling when you see them because just thousands of parked vehicles and storage boxes and other things that sat in these parking lots. And a big part of our effort was securing those parking lots because that's where we transfer things to the Afghans. But we did spend a lot of our time. We had tentacles into the Bagram base and airfield, and that's also stunning to me. Why we gave that up on July 1st? That when we do get around to having a select committee or a commission on Afghanistan, the question begs itself. Deserves to be answered. Why we gave up Bagram when that's exactly what we need in a time like this to get Americans out of the country.
I've got some quick questions, having grounded your experience in that. Ought the United States to be considering, do you think we are considering, some sort of an Incheon option to take back Bagram and, in fact, rescue Americans and destroy those very dangerous munitions now in the hands of an avowedly terrorist organization with others flooding into the country?
If you were going to secure any place in the country of Afghanistan, it'd be the Bagram airfield. I mean, that, traditionally, that's where we flew most of our missions out of for closed air support around the country. I mean, to answer your question, yes, it was strategically important. It is kind of in a bowl, though. I mean, it's surrounded by mountains, and there were often Taliban rocket attacks from up on the mountains onto the base. But
the larger question, Congressman, should we be considering it? Right. It can take anything. Should we be considering going back in, going on a counteroffensive to get our people out, to expand our footprint, perhaps to route the Taliban out of Kabul to buy some time to clean up what is a catastrophe? Or are we doomed to what has happened?
Hugh, I think Americans have a moral duty at this point to clean up the mess that we've directly caused and created. First and foremost, we have to get Americans out of the country. And this president and his administration have yet to articulate a plan to the American people about how, or to Congress even, how are they going to do that? I mean, they, as you've seen this administration, this president fumble all over themselves as they have no idea. They obviously didn't have a plan to begin with, but they have no idea how to get an estimated 12 to 15,000 Americans out of Afghanistan. And if that means that we have to take back over a strategic position at Bagram Air Base to do that, then we need to do anything that we can, whatever necessary to pull that off.
Now, Task Force 58, which General Mattis commanded in 2001, flew 400 nautical miles to set up a Marine Corps camp. It is not impossible. The question is whether or not this president and this foreign policy and national security civilian team, I'm sure the military has the capacity. The question is whether it's advisable. I don't know the answer to that. Do you think it's even being discussed?
I don't know. I mean, that's the troubling part about all of this. I mean, we don't know. We don't know what General Milley, what Secretary Austin, what the commander in chief, what are their plans to lead forward? And that's what's most shocking to me in this moment. I'm heartbroken for what's going on in Afghanistan. I know many of these people. I hear from them often. They're reaching out to me for help. But what's more shocking to me in this moment is that we have a commander in chief who is in hiding. He is missing in action. He is not leading. He is not assuring the American people that there is a plan to move forward. Hugh, the Taliban is not they're not the most sophisticated entity. I mean, they're only more powerful now because they have so much of our equipment empowering.
In fact, Congressman, for it. it foreshadows paralysis if China attacks Taiwan. That scares the hell out of me. But maybe they're planning an Incheon moment, and this is part of the deception. I'll be the first to admit they got me. Yay. But I don't think that's the case, and that brings me to the Stephanopoulos interview. ABC scored a coup. He's the president's friend, but the little bits that have been put out suggest he was at least moderately pressing on the president. George has put on Twitter this morning in response to a tweet of mine that they'll be releasing the transcript this morning. I want to see the entire unedited interview. I think that offer of a transcript ought to be rejected as quickly as President Nixon's offer of transcripts of the Watergate tapes to be given to Senator Stennis was rejected 50 years ago. Should that entire unedited interview be released?
Without a doubt. I mean, if ABC was going to agree to an exclusive interview with a president who refuses to answer questions in any public setting, then ABC owes it to the American people to release the entire video. Obviously, this interview did not go well for the president. The small a snippet of it that we've seen, Hugh, but I, like you, I want to see all of it. The American people deserve to see all of it. The American people deserve to know why is this president hiding? What is going on? What is preventing this president from appearing before the American people and assuring us that there is a plan and answering any question, the tough questions, the easy questions, answer any questions about what it's going to take to solve this catastrophe and lead this country forward. And right now, the president is living up to the worst perceptions about him. And those perceptions are that he is incapable of leading. And the fact that he did a video with George whatever that agreement was to appear with George and do this interview, we don't know what that agreement was. I'm sure it was it gave the White House some control over what was released. But ABC owes it to the American people to release all of it.
Very quickly, Senator Cotton suggested the president look shell-shocked. Do you have personal concerns about his capacity to make decisions at this moment?
You know, I've never been one to talk about that, Hugh. I mean, I've dismissed that, and I don't want to talk about any commander in chief like that. But at this point, it's clear that this president is that there's something larger going on here that prevents this president from leading our country. I mean, it's very clear that it's clear to the American people, and until he can assure us otherwise, the American people are going to continue to have growing doubts about his ability to lead our country.
Do you fear any imminent terrorist attack? We have 15 seconds, Senator.
Without a doubt. The rise of ISIS-K, Al-Qaeda, it's imminent in Afghanistan at this point, sadly.
Congressman Jim Banks, thank you for joining us. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. Welcome back. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway on a very dark Thursday. America's lost a war, maybe for the first time ever in its history. This is so much worse than Saigon's collapse in 1975 when Americans were not on the ground, not held hostage by the North Vietnamese army. The collapse of an ally is very different from the collapse of our own will. I'm joined by United States Senator Bill Hagerty, who served under President Trump as ambassador to Japan. Good morning, Senator. Welcome back.
Good morning, Hugh. It's great to be back with you.
Can you first give us your overview of the last week?
It's been heartbreaking, Hugh. It's been absolutely heartbreaking to see what's unfolding in Afghanistan. And it's not just the humanitarian disaster on the ground there. It's the embarrassment of a nation. Think about the blood that's been shed, the treasure that's been put in place there in Afghanistan. And for us to turn around, walk away, and create a vacuum with no planning whatsoever has been just an abomination. And it's not just the Americans that I'm hearing from. And I tell you, Hugh, I'm hearing from people here in Tennessee every day. We've got the 101st Airborne here. People know the sacrifices that we've made to build America's credibility in the world. And now we see our own people at risk. It's also our allies. I've talked to people from around the globe. I'm getting calls from everywhere. Our allies are deeply concerned about their ability to rely on America now, and they're concerned about our competence when they see a failed execution of this proportion.
Senator Hagerty, your colleague, Senator Cotton, 2 days ago on this program said the president appeared shell-shocked. It is now obvious to me that the entire executive branch is in a state of something approaching shell shock, incapable of actually making decisions. Now, I believe the military has that capability, and the further away from Washington it gets, the more that capability is obvious, right out to the walls on Kabul's airport. But Do you believe anywhere there is planning or contingency for a counteroffensive, any use of any sort of American force to save Americans, if necessary, reclaim Bagram or other places from which we can stage rescue operations?
Well, if I can take a step back and share some of my experience as Ambassador Hugh, every ambassador is responsible for what's known as a non-combatant evacuation operation plan, called NEO for short. But a NEO plan is the plan to move Americans safely, to move allies safely from a disaster situation. When I arrived in Japan, and again, Japan's the third largest economy in the world. At any given day, there are 250,000 Americans there. When I arrived in Japan, I reviewed my non-combatant evacuation operation plan. It was not up to snuff. It was dated. It took me months working through this with our military, with the State Department, with all of the involved parties to put in place an updated plan. But you remember the threat that I was facing at that point. We had North Korea launching intercontinental ballistic missiles over Japan. It's a volcanic island. There are many things that could happen. You've got to be prepared for all contingencies. I'll just say this without getting into any classified aspect of it. The military assets that we had in Japan were a significant component of my plan in terms of our ability to move people, to process people, and then flow them onward to a safe zone or onward back to America, whatever the case may have been. That plan, obviously, was never executed here in Afghanistan. That plan should have existed, failed immediately. And when you look at the fact that we withdrew our military before our diplomatic presence, before the Americans were out, you can see how obvious, how obviously crippling that was. And it just underscores the fact that there was not adequate planning in place.
Now, Senator, we know that. Now, I'm trying to look forward, though. Do you have any reason to believe we are planning any kind of Incheon option, any kind of counterattack, any kind of rescue operation involving the United States military? Have you been briefed on that? Ought that planning to be undertaken?
Yeah, what we've seen thus far is an increase. We're moving American military back in. Right now, they're targeting the airport there in Kabul, the Karzai Airport. There is a flow in place, but with respect to a broader plan, I don't have any comment to make on that.
Would you support any use of the military that President Biden authorizes based upon exigent circumstances to rescue Americans and allies?
Absolutely. I've been asked this before. We need to get Americans out of there, whatever it takes.
All right. Now, Senator, I don't enjoy asking this question. Representative Banks was just on, but the president's conduct over the last 6 days leads me to ask it. Do you have doubts about his capacity to make informed decisions?
This has created doubt, not only in my mind, in the mind of many, many Americans, but also doubt in the minds of our allies. It has been just shocking to see the president's lack of attention to this, his unwillingness to address it, the fact that he's tried to spin and deflect rather than accept responsibility, own it, and fix it. It's just been shocking, and I think the American people are crushed from the standpoint of seeing the reputation of our nation diminished as much as it has been diminished. They're crushed seeing American lives now put at risk in the way that they have been put at risk, and the fact that we have just cut and run, so to speak, without any plan in place is not the America that Tennesseans expect.
I believe it's fair to say that the American people as a whole were dismayed by the events and by the president's non-response. They were alarmed by the photo from Camp David. They were angry with the defiant speech, puzzled by his refusal to ask questions. And now the bits of the Stephanopoulos interview that we have seen have raised these questions about capacity. 4 or 5 days ago, that will be an indelible remark, a Roger Mudd-like moment with Teddy Kennedy. But ABC has an unedited tape. George Stephanopoulos told me via Twitter this morning, public facing, that a transcript would be released this morning. That is not, in my view, enough. Long ago, Richard Nixon offered a transcript of the Watergate tapes to John Stennis that was immediately and roundly rejected. Does ABC owe the American people an unedited view of the president since we have nothing else?
Well, I'm certain the American public would prefer this, and I think that you're raising it, talking about it right now, is a great way to put pressure on the situation to actually see the raw footage.
Have you been contacted by any member of the executive branch?
I have reached out and myself, and I've also been contacted by members of the executive branch at the cabinet level. So they are doing their best to keep us informed, but it's clear as they do it that there is a great void here in terms of planning. And I watched yesterday the press conference with Secretary Austin with Chief of Staff Mark Milley. I mean, it sounds as though they're depending on diplomatic success with the Taliban to get Americans to the airport. General Milley talked about, well, the State Department has sent messages to Americans on the ground. We need to be in a position to protect Americans and move them. In fact, our allies are doing that. Our allies are sending teams in to go and get their people and move them to the airport.
General Milley did, in fact, make reference to that capacity. He did not dismiss it. So I'm hopeful that there's planning going on. Yesterday, Leader McConnell was on the show and urged immediate action to reassure Taiwan, which is being threatened by the Chinese Communist Party, resumption of arms sales to Saudi Arabia, and other actions that former National Security Advisor O'Brien, former DNI Ratcliffe, have posted in the foreign policy website, a half dozen specific things we could take immediately to reinforce shattered American credibility. Have you reviewed any of these? Do you support the leader's position on Taiwan and Saudi Arabia?
I do support the leader's position, and I have the highest regard for our former National Security Advisor O'Brien and former DNI Ratcliffe. I think they're clear-eyed on this. I think they see what's been sacrificed right now, and we do need to take moves, and we can take moves to restore our allies' confidence in our ability to keep our word and show our resolve. We've got to have a sea change in the position of this administration right now. They need to wake up, and they need to address this.
Now, Senator Hagerty, I understand the need to keep confidential what is confidential. But when someone tells me they've talked to cabinet level, I have to ask, and unless you're forbidden from telling us, I think it would be reassuring to know, who are we talking about? When did you talk to them? And how long did you speak to them, too?
I've talked with at the secretary level with the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, and we have an ongoing update process.
Do they answer questions that you pose of them, or do they deflect them?
No, they're answering questions in earnest.
What kind of questions are you asking, Senator?
I think people want to. I think certainly people in my position want to know what the plan is, and we want to see an accountable process immediately put in place. It's less about looking backward right now, and more about understanding what we're doing to address the immediate situation where American lives are at stake and where the lives of the people who we've promised to care for are at stake. That's the primary concern right now. Longer term, there's going to be a lot more talk about what happened, a much more forensic view of what's taking place here. But right now, we're focused on getting American lives secured and safe, as well as the...
Is that what you're asking? Who are we saving and how?
Yeah, the focus right now is on American lives and safety.
Now, last question, Senator. In the aftermath of the fall of Saigon, Camp Pendleton became home to thousands of South Vietnamese. My brother-in-law worked that operation. My wife lived on the corner of the base at that time as a young Marine brat. We had thousands of refugees there, and they're all integrated into American society and well. Ought we to throw open the doors to our Afghan allies in the same fashion, perhaps even at the same place?
Well, I've certainly heard a lot of talk about that in the past few days. I'm going to say this, though, Hugh. We first have to focus on the promises and the commitments that we've made, taking care of Americans, taking care of those Afghans that worked and fought alongside us, that interpreted for us and helped us, that we made promises to on the ground. We could be facing a situation where we have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Afghans who want to be who want to flee Afghanistan. We don't have the capacity to properly vet these folks. We have to vet the people that are coming into America. You see the crisis that we've got at our southern border right now. I don't think America can accommodate the kind of chaos that may ensue there. We need to figure out a path and a process to evaluate the situation on the ground there in Afghanistan, work with local regional partners that are culturally more similar to those people who may want to depart and help find safe haven there. But we cannot overlook the desperate need to properly vet people coming from this region.
I agree, Senator, and perhaps call for the file on the Camp Pendleton operation. It has a name. I can't remember it, but it went very well. And Little Cobbles out near San Francisco as well. The resources are there to vet. I'm sure we can get it done, though they have to stay there for a while. Senator Bill Hagerty, the conversation will continue. I appreciate your efforts on behalf of Tennesseans and all Americans and your experience. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Hey, I can't forget ReliefFactor.com makes it possible for me to make these appeals to you, make it possible for me to interview Senator Hagerty, Congressman Banks, Leader McConnell, Tom Cotton, tomorrow Secretary Pompeo. You come here for the news because it's fair and balanced, and I look you in the eye and I ask the questions. And ReliefFactor.com makes that possible. I don't endorse products that I don't use. I got lots of new listeners, thousands of them, in fact. I use Relief Factor every single day. I carry in Kirkham and Resveratrol Omega. Makes the minor aches and pains less painful. Give it a try. 3-week starter pack is $19.95. ReliefFactor.com. I'm coming back with Senator Jim Talent. Don't go anywhere, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, joined by former United States Senator Jim Talent of the Bipartisan Policy Center. Senator Talent, your reaction to the events of the past week?
It's what you've been saying. It's a dark day. It's an utter disaster. Everybody I talk to in Washington is shell-shocked, and evidently including the president. You're right to be calling for the release of the entire interview. And, you know, one question I have, and I assume is going to get asked at some point, is was the interagency process engaged? And when? I mean, I watched Milley and Austin's press conference, and Milley says, well, we didn't have enough troops to hold both Bagram and the embassy, and we decided to hold the embassy and briefed everybody, and that was approved. And I just, what was this process that they used? There should have been a principals meeting called months ago. You know how this works, you followed up with deputies meetings where state was there and commerce, and probably led by defense.
Senator Talent, I'm shocked by the lack of staffing at Camp David over the weekend, and others who have served in close proximity to the president remarked on his being on helicopters alone, on his isolation, and wonder, indeed, where is everybody?
It's what I'm asking, too. But where were they? And then for him to say this could not have been handled any better? I mean, if he really believes that, then I think he's just so out of touch. Yes, obviously it could have been handled better. Now, I think what a process like that would have revealed, probably, particularly if you plan against all the contingencies you should plan against, is that they needed to increase the footprint while they did the evacuation. And I think Milley and I think McKenzie and the others were at least under the impression they couldn't do that.
We'll have to find out. Now, I would like to ask Senator Talent. We had a 9/11 commission. It was well run. It was bipartisan at the beginning of this war. Now we have lost the war, at least apparently so. I want to ask you about a potential Inchon option. Do we need an August 2021 commission that operates the same way once we get past our peril to the American citizens and our allies and Afghan friends and indeed any terrorist peril that presents itself? Do we need that body to be stood up and to ask these questions?
I think that would be ideal. I think what is more likely to happen is you're just going to see a number of oversight hearings. My concern about that is that we're going to have a number of them instead of one body of the Congress doing it. But that's probably what will happen. But yes, this is a disaster that everybody I'm talking to believes, and I've been asking if there's any precedent for anything this bad. In terms of the failure of the government at all levels to operate.
Now this must be like Pearl Harbor Monday. And it takes a while. I understand that. It takes a while. It's not like Saigon. It's not like 9/11. It's got to be like, but we've lost a war. We've never lost a war. We've never had this situation in modern times. And what Ambassador Oren talked about, the stuff that has fallen into the hands of the worst people on the planet is scary.
The equipment that they're getting, the effect of this on allies, potential allies, and adversaries. I mean, you saw Boris Johnson had to have a 7-hour debate in the House of Commons, and he and his foreign minister stood there, and they beat the tar out of them for Joe Biden's decisions and the failures of our government. Now, you know, these are allies. You get Trudeau saying, well, how come I can't talk to the president? I said to my wife last night, you know, they bungled it, and now they're bungling the bungling.
But the thing I'm coming around to, Senator, and I've been obsessed on this, I can't enjoy anything other because it's just such a shock, is that we're at risk. I mean, we're these thousands of Americans, we could have 25 Tehran embassies. We could have 50. We could have 1,000 of them.
If I can say, that would be the first question I would ask about an Incheon-type maneuver like you're talking about. Of course, part of the problem is, what kind of situational awareness do you think we have now? I'm not challenging you on this. I'm just saying, I mean, we don't know where we don't know what they're capable of.
But Senator, I'm almost, this is not a disciplined force in Kabul. I saw them dancing with their AK-47s last night.
I understand, but what happens to the Americans who are there if we try to assume control of any of the country outside the airport? I mean, this is a question, first question I would be asking, assuming they have some kind of process, because my fear is that they're going to start, the obvious fear, they're going to start taking hostages, right?
Well, my obvious fear is they've already got them and that they're going to get them because we've wasted a week. And I don't think Americans appreciate the peril.
Obviously should be explored, that alternative. But we're so, I don't think we have any awareness because we don't have any assets or any capability of getting it for what the where we would need to go, where the Americans are.
I'd ask Jim Mattis. He managed Task Force 58 over 400 nautical miles to set up a Marine Expeditionary Force in the middle of the desert in 2001. I sure hope someone's asked Stanley McChrystal, because I have grave, grave doubts about the executive branch right now. Senator Talent, always a pleasure. Hour number three, straight ahead, America. Stay tuned. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning Glory America, Hugh Hewitt live in the Beltway on a dark Thursday, August 19. I'm joined by United States Senator Ben Sasse. Good morning, Senator Sasse. Welcome back.
It's the morning. It's not good, but yeah. Morning.
Senator, I want to remind people you're a PhD historian from Yale, and then ask this question. Has America ever confronted a situation like this where we have lost a war and left 15,000 or so Americans behind, as well as allies and friends?
With those particulars, no. Obviously, there are lots of important historical parallels with, you know, some difference about Saigon and some difference about the hostage crisis. But when you combine the failures morally, the failures of planning leadership, and the failures of just communication to the American people about what the actual choices are, and then end up with this many Americans and this many heroic Afghans who fought alongside us to take the fight against the Taliban and al-Qaeda over there rather than over here, I don't think there's a parallel to this.
So it is catastrophic, and I am not surprised that there's a lot of shock. I may be, you know, representative of media. I'm both obsessive about it, and I can't watch anything else, but I'm trying not to overreact to anything. Nevertheless, I have to ask you, is the executive branch functioning?
No. I mean, you saw it yesterday with the difference between the Austin and Milley comments and I guess the Biden comments that are supposed to be on Stephanopoulos this morning. I get confused about which piece was for which day. But when they can't say things as simple as there is no countdown clock on an American life, they have no plan, as senators on the Intelligence Committee of both parties have been screaming at them since April, it sure as heck doesn't feel like you have a plan. And you're saying all these romantic, weird things about the Taliban craving international recognition and legitimacy, and there will be no Taliban assault on Kabul until after the pause in the fighting season for the winter. You say all of these romantic things that don't sound like military or diplomatic planners. Why are you so sure of this, and what is your contingency plan? And it's clear that they didn't have one. Right now, we're depending on the Taliban to let people get to an airport. And if one of those fighters downs a jet on the runway or on takeoff with a Stingray, This nightmare is going to get a lot worse. And they just keep coming back to these rhetorical tropes about how there was no other choice and chaos was going to ensue no matter what. I was against this withdrawal decision, but that's a different question than whether or not you execute it like a bunch of imbeciles.
Now, Senator, I still am cognizant that everyone is sort of coping with an unprecedented situation. But ABC received an exclusive interview after the collective American people were appalled by Monday's speech. Shocked he didn't take questions Monday or Wednesday, alarmed that he's in hiding. And the bits that we've seen raise serious questions of capacity, the 4 or 5 days comment, among others. Does ABC owe us the unedited tape so we can evaluate the president's capacity?
I'm for that. It's not a question I've thought about, but yeah, I'm for the American people being able to see this. The president, your point about the 4 or 5 days comment, let's just think about what happened there. The American people saw images of Afghans fleeing and being willing to make the, you know, incredibly improbable or actually suicidal decision to just try to stick on the side of a plane or climb into the landing gear well, because they knew the probability of simple execution if they were abandoned in Kabul. And let's be clear what their crime was. Their crime was for being allied and united with us and fighting a common enemy that brought down the World Trade Center or provided the safe haven that enabled the taking down of the World Trade Center and has continued to fight against the government of Afghanistan. We have all this nonsense where people say this is a 20-year invasion. We had a one-year invasion after 9/11. And then the government of Afghanistan asked for our support. We gave our support. And these people now see that we are abandoning them, an unbelievably immoral act on the global stage. And the American people see that image. And the president of the United States, the commander in chief, gets irked and says that was days ago. No, these are images that are going to last 100 years. But regardless of what day they came, there's no one in the American public who's given a rip about which news cycle the images came from. And clearly, the president's team is coaching him to treat this as if the American people have no attention span, and 2 weeks or 2 months from now, we'll have all forgotten it. So just push on and act like you should attack any question you get about it as something from the distant past. Right now, there are thousands and thousands of Americans who are well beyond the wire outside the Karzai International Airport. And the State Department is sending them messages saying we can't guarantee any passage for you to the airport. And we know that General Austin, Secretary Austin, said that he doesn't have the capacity to push back the perimeter of the airport. That is not true. What he's demonstrating is a lack of will, not a lack of capacity to push back the perimeter of the airport. And you have a bunch of heroes beyond just the Americans. You have Afghan allies of the American people who are well beyond the outskirts of the airport, don't know if they can get there. And the calls we're getting to my office from some of our Afghan allies and from some Americans who've, you know, fought before and have built relationships with these people and made pledges on your and my behalf to them. These folks, when they try to get across the Taliban checkpoints on their way to Karzai Airport, they're burning their American documents because they know they're at risk of, you know, beatings and beheadings at these checkpoints by the Taliban bloodthirsty thugs. So they burn their American documents so they can get through the checkpoint, and then they get to the airport, and we have American military leadership saying, we have no ability to even engage these people. We can't push back the perimeter. We're too weak. No, they're demonstrating a lack of will. That is not a functioning government.
And, Senator, I am worried that the American people are not fully aware, and you're on the Intel Committee, so I want to know if it's raised there. Zawahiri is out there. There are other splinter groups out there that would love nothing more than to blow up more Americans, take Americans hostage. Is anyone evaluating the threat? Are we thinking about an Incheon option? Are we thinking about military force? General Mattis oversaw Task Force 58. 400 nautical miles we traveled to the middle of the Afghan desert in 2001. Is anyone talking about, we might not end up having an August 2021 commission. We might end up having a September 2021 commission about thousands of Americans trapped and hundreds killed or an attack on the homeland. No one seems to get this.
Yeah, without crossing over any classified line, I'll just say that the Senate Intel Committee has been serving the American people well, and every Republican has been raising our voices and up in arms since the April moment. Again, I was against the decision, but what we're talking about here is primarily the execution, not the decision to withdraw, though I was against that. Republicans have been screaming about it, but Mark Warner, our chairman, has also done a very good job asking a lot of questions along the lines of what you're saying. But again, I don't want to get into those particulars. But just to your point about the many, many characters out there who have names that are not household names like bin Laden, we should be clear about why they're not household names. It wasn't because they lacked the will, and it wasn't because they weren't planning. It's because they never took down a World Trade Center. And the reason they never took down a World Trade Center is because we were effective in so much of this mission. Our intelligence operators and our special operators out there, our special forces, have decapitated terror organizations again and again and again. It was always a false choice to say we need to have zero troops in theater or we need 150,000 occupying ground forces. We haven't had 100,000 people in Afghanistan in a decade plus. What we needed was the special forces on the ground, the intelligence gathering capabilities, and air support. And what went wrong here tactically, more than anything else, is the bizarre political decision of the Biden administration to just rip the air support from the Afghan security forces and then turn around and be surprised that these people who were trained to fight in a way that had air superiority, and now the United States took their air superiority away from them, and were surprised that they then weren't sure how they would fight.
Okay, so Senator, we got a minute and a half. I'd like your sincere advice to the president who has closed himself off. He might read this transcript. One of his advisors is surely listening. I know that. What ought the president to do?
Let's start with two things. First of all, we should be unambiguous that there is absolutely no countdown clock on American lives. And we should be clear that the 60,000 folks, or arguably 80,000 folks plus families, that we've made particular commitments to, we are getting those people out, and we are indifferent to the calendar. The Taliban has no say about whether or not the American government has will to save American people and American allies who heroically fought to protect us.
How should he communicate that?
He should speak to the American people and to the world. He obviously has the biggest bully pulpit that's ever existed. But number two is he needs to direct his military, our military, to push the perimeter out way, way beyond Karzai Airport.
I agree.
We need to be sure that the Taliban doesn't own the paths to the airport.
I agree. Senator Ben Sasse, thank you. I'll be right back, America. It's Thursday. I'm live in the Beltway. It's Hugh Hewitt. Joined by former Secretary of the Interior, Ryan Zinke, former Congressman Zinke as well, and former Commander of SEAL Team 6, Zinke. And it's in that capacity I say welcome back, Secretary, Commander, Congressman. Good to have you.
Hey, great to be with you, Hugh. What a disaster morning.
It is.
It took the Biden administration just a few weeks to dismantle everything that we did right in Afghanistan. You look at energy, you look at the border. In a few weeks, he's dismantled this country. Afghanistan, front and center today. But I can tell you from my view is that we have lost our credibility. In special forces, we rely, there's a saying, winning the hearts and minds. And we rely on our foreign counterparts, we rely on indigenous people to help us in our pursuit of freedom around the globe. Special forces are in dozens of countries. But when we abandon the same allies, brazenly abandon them in the battlefield, it has consequences. Who's going to trust us now? How are we going to work with our foreign counterparts when our credibility is zero? This is a stain on America, and it's going to take a long, long time to remove it.
I'm glad you underscore that, because we have SEALs deployed around the world right now who are working, for example, with UAE counterparts and special forces in Djibouti, with other people deployed in the Somalia areas, all of whom now have allies looking at them and wondering, are you going to leave me behind? And that's a great, I haven't heard that observation. Thank you for that, Commander. So, Mr. Secretary, let me ask you, right now, do you believe that your former comrades and their chain of command are planning ways to get the Americans out of Afghanistan?
No doubt they're looking at it. What I hoped I heard from the president was, hey, this is the actions we've taken. This is the current situation. This is where we're going forward. I didn't hear any of that. Matter of fact, I haven't even heard President Biden say anything that's non-scripted in the middle of this disaster. But, you know, I would assume they're looking at three buckets. We got to get our citizens out. You know, and these are in, no one knows how many. We know there's thousands. But, you know, the worst scenario is the Taliban, who this administration is trusting for free passage, by the way. And remember, 9/11, these are the same guys, right? So I assume they're going to look at how to get our citizens out first. Every citizen's a potential hostage. Then you have our allies and their families. Remember, a lot of the interpreters and our close allies, you know, their families were in jeopardy. In some cases, their families were killed because they worked for us. So, yeah, that's the second bucket. And then you have this refugee, crisis. And those refugees need to be vetted. You know, we don't know who they are. Of course, then again, you look at our southern border. You know, we let in 210,000 people last month, unvetted. They come across the border. They're processed in a couple hours and redistributed who knows where in the U.S. We don't know if they have COVID. We don't know if they're terrorists. We don't know if they have criminal records. We don't know because they're not vetted. So I would hope the military is looking at it in buckets. Let's focus on our American citizens. We got a lot of them. We don't know how many there are. Therefore, how do you plan on getting them out? How do you rotate aircraft in if you don't know how many people are going to be on that aircraft? And last
Secretary Zinke, let me ask you, though. Yeah. Senator Sass just said we have to be investigating pushing the perimeter out from Karzai Airport. Do you think that we could execute any order that the president gave, for example, a repeat of Task Force 58, where the Marines from 400 nautical miles away set up a camp in the middle of nowhere, Afghanistan, and proceeded from there? Could this enemy, they're driving around in bumper cars, they're having dances with Kalashnikov. This is not a disciplined fighting force. Could we re-engage and do an Incheon option?
You know, Kabul would not be my first choice. You know, we left in the middle of the night and abandoned Kandahar, Bagram. You know, these air bases were much better. They were much more defendable. They had two runways, huge aprons where you could defend it. Kabul Airport is pretty tight. And, you know, remember, we left all the equipment from the Afghan military, right? So all that is there now in the hands of Taliban. And that's a considerable force.
Well, this is catastrophic, Mr. Secretary. I'm trying to get people to we cannot leave the status quo, not just the Americans. We've armed terrorists. Zawahiri is out there somewhere. You guys got al-Baghdadi, you got Soleimani. You pulled out Osama bin Laden from a hidey hole in Pakistan. You got a lot of people, but Zawahiri and his terrorists are still there. We are at grave risk.
Well, we are exactly a great risk. And, of course, the service members that we go into Kabul, you know, are a great risk because they're surrounded.
Yes.
Let's be frank. You know, they can sit on the hillside with the artillery pieces, with the armament that they now have control, and they can pepper us at will all day. So, you look at it and you go, how could this be worse? Well, I suppose it could always be worse, but this is in my lifetime, I've never seen a more chaotic, unplanned execution that managed to abandon our allies, put Americans at risk, put our troops at risk, and what's the plan?
Well, I know it could be worse. That's what, let's ask about the plan. We got 15,000 Americans. There could be numerous different independently acting operators, from gangsters to Taliban to Al-Qaeda to ISIS, grabbing Americans everywhere. What do we do? We can't just sit at Karzai Airport, can we? And pray? Is that what the American people are reduced to hoping?
Well, and how are we going to trust the same Taliban that attacked us and aided and abetted the attacks on September 11th? And remember, we had a hostage trade, right? So we had these guys in Gitmo. So, you know, the fact that they were there and the fact that we exchanged them for what I think is a soldier who walked off his post –
That was a deserter.
I got that.
But, you know,
but
coming back,
Mr. Secretary,
the same guys are in there.
Help us by drawing on your expertise as the commander of SEAL Team 6, Secretary of the Interior. You know what? What has crossed your mind as what we could do right now to mitigate and redress the obvious vulnerabilities to Americans there and here, as well as our allies in Afghanistan? What could we do?
You know, we're going to have to set up, you know, probably, you know, I would look at Pakistan if you know, they say, well, shelter in place. Well, that only works for a short period of time. You're going to have to look at least securing some border crossing. So American citizens, and you're going to get a lot of mixed bag, right? There's going to have to be some sorting and selection of people. Kabul itself is pretty tight quarters.
We may have to
engage in one of the larger airports. Remember, Kabul only services, you know, that smaller area, right? And it's
right.
difficult to get in.
Right. That's why your colleague, your fellow special operator, Green Beret Michael Waltz, now serving in Congress. My son works for him. I always acknowledge that. But Waltz has been out saying we have to set up safe areas in Afghanistan for people to get to by hook or by crook. I mean, there's nowhere to go. They can't get to Karzai.
Well, and I think that's correct. I think you need some safe havens, perhaps on an adjacent border area, you know, Pakistan. Maybe Bagram, maybe Kandahar. Looking at it where we have defendable space, you know, those airports were large enough to design that. Of course, we left in the middle of the night and didn't tell our counterparts what we were doing. But you're right. I mean, where do you go from here? I think President Biden needs to explain where we go from here. I think Milley needs to explain. Blinken needs to explain to the American people about, hey, this is what we did. This is the current situation. This is where we're going.
But, you know, if they just were to say, we're looking at it, we're working the problem. We've got, I don't know who's running special forces now. We've had some great warriors come and go. I don't know who's running. If they just said, we're working the problem, I would be more relieved. But there's no indication they are working the problem, although I'm certain somebody is.
Well, I'm certain within the halls of the Pentagon, they're burning the midnight oil because they got this in their lap. My understanding is the State Department took the lead. You know, this is the outcome. But I'm sure they're looking at options. None of the options are particularly good because Afghanistan, you're going to need, you know, when you get a U.S. citizen out, you're going to have to land someplace. You're going to have to sort. You have to vet. That's going to require a third party nation that's willing to work with us now. There's fewer on the list today than there were just a couple days ago. So, but you know, this is a massive undertaking. You know. Thousands of U.S. citizens is, you know, you look how many can get in an aircraft, where they're going to go, the amount of firepower you need to protect the soldiers that go in, because they are surrounded. This is a logistics, you know, problem. I think the U.S. has the forces to do it, but do we have the will? And thus far, we didn't have the will to hang with our allies. And look, a lot of these interpreters, they fought with us shoulder to shoulder, you know, and their cost of freedom was their family, their livelihood.
I get it. I just think we need to have more people like you saying, Mr. President, we will support you if you act with boldness and dispatch. We will not cut your legs out if it's a black hot down situation. Act with confidence with that. We've got your back. And I think Americans would agree. We've got his back if he acts with boldness. Last question. Do you agree?
Well, I agree. And follow me at ryanzinke.com. And I tell you what, I got five SEALs. In order to win the House of Representatives back, we need five seats. We have five SEALs that will take those five seats and get the majority of the House back.
Good. Ryanzinke.com.
I think this country's done.
I think we also have to throw out Gavin Newsom and elect Glenn Youngkin. We have two votes immediately in front of us that will register with the National Democratic Party to abandon this crazy ideology. But RyanZinke.com. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.